It's a great time of year, this time of year, isn't it? I reckon. I look forward to this time of year every year. I reckon I look forward to this time that you get to look forward to Christmas, get to really look forward to Christmas. I love the anticipation time of year before we get to Christmas. And it's just good to have something to look forward to. And it's probably something we feel we probably need sometimes at this time of year too. Because alongside that excitement of Christmas and the holidays and all those that this time of year brings, there's also that struggle to maintain the enthusiasm to do the things we need to do to finish out the year, isn't there, at this time of year. It becomes a bit of a drag sometimes. I've just come to the end of my study year this week, actually. And that's also, well, technically, I finished that at midnight tonight anyway. But it's been a big week for me to finish the last of my assessments and stuff in that this week. And I do always find this time of year the hardest to finish what I need to do. And it's not that I have any more to do than what I do throughout the rest of the year. It's just I find it harder to maintain that enthusiasm at this time. Like this week, I really had to work hard to focus and keep my mind on the task at hand. But instead of keeping my mind on that thing I needed to do, to finish, all I wanted to do was dream about the things I could be free to do when I finished my study this year. So, and that's it proved to be my biggest hindrance this week was that dreaming about the things I could do after I finish is the very thing that was getting in the way of me actually finishing what I needed to do. And I reckon we all do this in different areas in our lives. We could probably do it with work and other commitments just as much as what I have with my study this week, where we see where we are now in the here and now as something that's just in the way or on the way to something bigger and better down the track there somewhere. And I fear that when we do this too much and don't appreciate what's there today, it's when we can't see the value in the life in right here and now, I wonder if we'll see the value in the things that we're even looking forward to as well when we eventually get there too. I don't really think it's our looking forward either that's really the problem. It's more about being dissatisfied with the present. We look forward from this sense of dissatisfaction with the hope that what's ahead will hold more value for us than what's here and now. If I can just get this study out of the way, if I can just get past this job, or if I can just lose this weight, or meet that right person, or even get away from these people, then I'll be where I want to be, and then I'll be satisfied. Maybe our dissatisfaction with the present, though, is from simply not being aware of God's purpose for us in the present. We might believe he has a purpose for us somewhere down the track when we're in a better place, but we just can't seem to see that there's a purpose of us being right here, right now in this place. I reckon there's a purpose wherever we are, and there's a reason for us being here. There's a purpose or a reason that God has us right where we are, here and now. These are some of the things we're going to look at today as we dig into and discover some of the things in our passage in John. Discovering purpose in the present. And more than that, discovering purpose, our purpose and value in the present by discovering God's presence with us in the present. We're looking at this passage where Philip, well, one of the disciples, voices his own dissatisfaction, and the dissatisfaction of the disciples probably more so to Jesus. As Elizabeth read before, but we've been making our way through John's Gospel for the last couple of months now, and we're getting to this point in the Gospel where Jesus is beginning to prepare his disciples for his departure from them. Chris is talking about how Jesus was preparing himself, but at this point in John's Gospel, there's a big thing here where Jesus is really preparing his disciples. They call it the farewell discourse, and it's quite a significant section in the Gospel. It's spanning a few chapters. And we see throughout this section where Jesus is having this rather lengthy discussion with his closest followers. And they're quite unsettled by the things that are being said in the conversation. They've been following Jesus around the place for what we'd presume would be about 3 years now. They've witnessed the miracles. They've heard the profound wisdom in Jesus' words. They've encountered various dangers along the way, too, as the powers around the place have grown increasingly hostile toward Jesus. But there's been something in this man they're following that's empowered them and given them a willingness to follow him wherever it was going to go, wherever it was leading them, even if it meant death. Which is it was beginning to look like by this stage, with the extent to which the hostility had grown by this point. But they seem to be willing nonetheless, these disciples. Because I don't know, maybe he just had that presence about him that strengthened them and made them feel like there was a reason for being where they were with him, whatever happened down the track. But this confidence hit a bit of a wall, and maybe this willingness too, when Jesus began telling them that he'd be leaving them soon. It was a shock to them as he was saying these words. And I doubt that anything they would have seen along their journey the last few years would have been anything they were expecting. But this was something that just seemed like too much. In all that they had seen and heard throughout that journey, something had convinced them, I'm sure, that this was all leading to something. And now he says he's leaving them. We hear from Peter first, who's always seems to be the one that's quick to speak his mind. He responds first. He says, "Lord, where are you going?" as he begins to tell them. And there's a bit of discussion here in the previous chapter about Peter's denial of Jesus. But in so many words, Jesus eventually alludes to the point that he's going to the Father. Then it's Thomas who pipes up, asking Jesus to show them the way then to where he's going. To which Jesus famously responds, "I am the way. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me," he says. And then we come to Philip, where Elizabeth read for us this morning. And Philip says, "Well, show us the Father, and then we'll be satisfied. Then we'll be content. It'll be enough for us then." I like seeing these three responses grouped together between the three of them, Peter, Thomas, and Philip. Where are you going? To the Father. Show us the way then. He says, "I am the way." "Well, show us the Father, then we'll be satisfied." Which Jesus replies pretty much, "I've been showing you the Father the entire time." He says, "Have I been with you all this time, Philip, and yet you still don't know who I am?" Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. So why are you asking me to show him to you now? I love John's gospel. The key thing that John's trying to tell us in his account of Jesus' life is simply, Jesus is God. Plain and simple. John doesn't hold back on claiming that. And people seem to recognize the role Jesus is claiming to be fulfilling throughout the gospel, which is to be the revealer of God. But they don't seem to recognize through most of the story that Jesus is in fact God in the flesh. That he is God revealing God. God revealing himself as a man. What I love about John, but the Gospel of John and the way he writes this, is that he doesn't want his readers to make the same mistake as those people in the story. He wants us to know from the very beginning that Jesus is God. He tells us in the very first chapter that Jesus is God and God became a man in order to reveal himself to the world. And yet the world didn't recognize him. If we were going to write a story like this, you'd think that'd be something worth leaving toward the end of the story, wouldn't you? But for some reason, John thinks it's important that we know right from the start exactly who Jesus is. It seems it's also something Jesus wanted his disciples to recognize now too. But they were too busy looking ahead to what might be lying ahead beyond where they were now in their journey with Jesus. They were too busy looking ahead to stop and see what was right there in front of them, right then and there. How often do we do that ourselves? Looking ahead for something else. Looking for something bigger and better. And all the while, we're missing the life that's happening right there in front of us. Here and now. I was sitting on our back veranda at home the other morning. Sitting there gazing out our backyard after eating breakfast. It must be something I'd do a bit because one of the kids walked out and said, "Why do you always sit there looking at the same thing?" I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "It's just the same thing. So boring. Why can't we have something different to look at?" It got me thinking, and because I do sit there. I realized, just looking at what she calls the same thing, and but I don't really see what they call the same thing. A fair bit's changed at our house since we moved there a few years ago. We've done a bit of work in the backyard and stuff, and I can see some of that change when I sit on the back veranda and look out there. Part of me looks out. And it sees the things that still need to be done. Looking forward to creating a bit more change. Or maybe even cleaning up on some of the things that have been neglected over the time. And there's another part of me that just enjoys looking out and seeing what's there now. And appreciating it. Probably something we could well do with doing in all sorts of areas in our lives, isn't it? Just slowing down enough to see what's there in our lives, right here and now. And not missing it. Because If we can't see the purpose in the here and now, we're unlikely to see it any better in the road or what lies ahead. And if there's a reason for us being where we are now, I reckon it's pretty likely that it serves some purpose in equipping us for whatever purpose lies ahead for us in the future. It brings us back to Jesus' discussion with his disciples as he's preparing them for what lies ahead. And that's what he's doing, is preparing them. In response to Philip's requests for Jesus just to show them the Father and then they'll be satisfied, Jesus stresses to them just how important it is that they see what they're missing right here and now. They want to see God. They knew when Jesus referred to the Father, he was talking about God. They wanted Jesus to show them something solid and tangible about this God that he just related to so freely and confidently. But they failed to see. What they failed to see is that's just exactly what Jesus had been doing the entire time that he'd been traveling with them. In Jesus, God's presence had been with them throughout all their journeys. God's been right there with them. They've just failed to see him while they've been looking forward to wherever it was Jesus was leading them to. What bigger and better things was all this going to? Jesus says, you're missing it. You're missing it right here and now. And you can sense the urgency in his words for how desperately he wants them to see it now. He goes on to say, just believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. I tell you the truth, he says. Anyone who believes in me will do the same works I have done, even greater works, because I am going to be with the Father. From his words here, we see that the importance of seeing this now, in believing that God was in their midst right now in Jesus, is that it's all part of preparing them and equipping them for the things, the greater things that lie ahead. Whatever it was that lied ahead, he made that quite clear that it consisted of the same things they'd seen him doing, but even greater things too. And what we see here in what Jesus is saying to his disciples is that in order for them to be equipped for those greater things that lie ahead, they've got to see what's right there in front of them here and now. They've got to recognize what's there in the present. See the purpose and what right here and now means. And what was it that was there for them to see? It was God. It was God right there. God's presence right there with them where they were at that very moment. I wonder what that would do for us if we took the time and space in our lives. What'd you call it, Chris? What was it? Still point. Something like that, still point. We took that to stop looking beyond where we are now enough to recognize God's presence with us right where we are here and now. I reckon it would change a lot about the way we see things in the present. Because when we recognize that God is with us right where we are in the present, we're sure to see that God has us right where we are for a reason, for a purpose. I think of our journey as a church. A lot of the journey, and there's some of you that have been part of this journey a lot longer than me, but what I've seen at least is in our journey, a lot of it's been one where we've been looking forward to finally having that church building where to work from. And it would surely open up a lot more opportunities for us to serve God in the area that He has us in here at Highfields. I believe it's something we should continue to aim toward and look toward, look forward to even. So I do wonder if the purpose God has for us then will be any more important than the purpose He has for us as a church right where we are here and now. Because I do believe that God has gathered us all here together as a church for a purpose right here and now. And whatever it is that lies ahead for us as a church, I'm pretty sure a big part of equipping us for whatever it is that lies ahead will be discovering that God has us right where we are now for a purpose and seeing that purpose. And speaking of building, some of those things I'll be looking forward to getting into after my study for the year are some home renos we began a while ago. And well, it's probably Sarah who's looking forward to me getting back into that even more, and she'll be on to me. I remember as we were getting close to winter throughout the year, Sarah was getting worried that it might have been getting a bit cold. It was going to be too cold to be having all our carpet pulled up to replace our flooring. And she needn't have worried too much because we're coming into summer now and the carpet's still yet to be pulled up. Jean put a picture up on Facebook a while ago that I really related to in these sort of things. Hey, Toby, yeah, that's it. If you can't read it, it says, "If a man says he will fix it, he will. There is no need to remind him every 6 months." Yeah. I definitely relate to it, so I commented on that one. Thanks, Gene. There's always something Sarah's onto me about at home. And maybe I do need some urging along sometimes. But I've noticed, when I do get into a job that Sarah's been onto me for a while about, it seems that just when I'm getting close to finally finishing that task, and I'm looking forward to receiving the acclaim and the congratulations for doing the thing that she so desperately wanted done, by that point, her interests always seem to have moved on to something else by then. So I don't get that praise and adoration that I was looking for. It's just, can we just get on to this other thing now? I really wish we could get that thing done. I only use that example. It's not the full picture, of course. If Sarah wasn't on to me, there probably wouldn't be much getting done at all at home. But just don't tell her that. But I think we can all be guilty of that unsettled dissatisfaction and somewhere in our lives, where even when we get to those things that we're looking forward to, there's got to be something else to look forward to because that's just no longer enough. Always looking for something bigger and better down the track. And I think we should be looking forward to bigger and better things. That is a good thing. But if we can't be satisfied and see what there is in the life that's right there in front of us in the present, we're unlikely to be satisfied with the things ahead when they eventually become the present for us too. But there might be times, and we might be in it right now, where we think things are pretty crap where we are. right now. And you might be quite justified in believing so too. The disciples thought it was pretty crap too, as Jesus was talking to them here about leaving. They felt like they were going to be abandoned. But in the midst of that conversation, Jesus really stresses to them that he's leaving is actually for their benefit. His leaving was going to open the door for an even more intimate presence with God through the Holy Spirit. This goes on further in the chapter. It makes you think, though, when you look at that and you put yourself in the place of the disciples there and what they were seeing and what was really happening, what we see in the story being read from hindsight, makes you think those places that seem pretty crap at the time, that maybe there's a greater purpose for them than what we realize. But we'll only discover that purpose by taking the time and space in life to stop and see, really see what's here, where we are now. To stop and see, to discover where God is in all of this, here and now. So as I said before, when we discover that God is here with us, right where we are here and now, we're sure to discover that there's a reason, a purpose God has us right where we are here and now. I reckon it's more about, it's more than about being satisfied too, about more than being satisfied. It can be empowering, energizing. When we value the present and tend to that purpose that God has us in this place we find ourselves in now, it'll only help us to become more equipped for the bigger and better things that we are looking forward to, that we're hoping for, that lie down the track. This is exactly what he's doing with his disciples. They were going to go into things this point on. But it was important for them to see what was there at that moment, for them to be equipped to go on and continue the work that Jesus has been doing in the world. "You'll do greater things," he said. I'm sure that means the same for us too. But those greater things that you'll do, that he spoke about, it was only in line with seeing the greatness of the things that are right there in front of us now. And he meant that most of all in the sense of recognizing God's presence here with us in the present.